Yoga Vashishta, Part 6 by Swami Suryadevananda. Prayer before study. Salutations to that reality in which all the elements and all the animate and inanimate beings shine as if they have an independent existence, and in which they exist for a time and into which they merge. Salutations to that consciousness which is the source of the apparently distinct threefold divisions of knower, knowledge and known, seer, sight and seen, doer, doing and deed. Salutations to that bliss absolute, the ocean of bliss, which is the life of all beings whose happiness and unfoldment is derived from the shower of spray from that ocean of bliss. The last time, we spoke about four things. The illusion, what is done by the mind is action, and what is renounced by the mind alone is renunciation. The cure, the mind runs after objects because it seeks fulfillment or fullness in them, and feels that these objects will bring about that fullness. Spiritual discipline is positive, not punitive. When the inner intelligence awakens, it shines a floodlight on what is best, while habit insists on the habitual. Spiritual discipline is that inner strength to stay the course of what is best. And lastly, about all these help. But you have to do what needs to be done. Study of the scriptures is study of the self through scriptures. The company of the wise is the company of wisdom in all ways at all times. And the abandonment of the pursuit of pleasure is itself tranquility of mind. Our topics today include beyond conditioning, purification, staying undistracted, and beyond restlessness. Greetings. We start today by talking about conditioning and going beyond conditioning. What exactly is conditioning? Conditioning disallows seeing things as they are by substituting what is preferred, and this can be positively or negatively. So even while seeing them, we are seeing our own conditioning only. We used a simple example on this a little earlier, and I'll repeat that again because it illustrates the point well. Say you're at work at your office, and you go down to the water fountain, and you see somebody coming, your friend, a friend or a co-worker, and you greet that person, and that person does not acknowledge. It registers in your mind, oh, what a rude person. But the rudeness is not in the person, it's in the registering that I did, and hence it's in my own mind. And so the next time I see or hear or think of that person, I don't think of the person, I think of the person with the quality attached first, that rude person. And so similarly, our world grows smaller and smaller and smaller if we don't watch the play of conditioning. As conditioning restricts our thinking and our ability to see things as they are by substituting all these little add-ons, which are not part of the conditioning itself. So what do we do about it? Firstly, it takes some spiritual discipline. Spiritual discipline is a fuel for the lamp of vigilance. Vigilance is going to allow us to see things as they are without this add-on mechanism taking shape or playing its game. Relentless inner vigilance is required, ongoing and non-stop, for one to be free of conditioning. This vigilance, we're usually cautious or observant about things outside, but not so much about things inside. The outer and the inner are both seen actually in the same field of view. Where I see the outer is also where I see the inner, and both of them can be brought into the same field of observation with just a little care. The last time we talked about how to do this, to do one thing at a time, to do it slowly, so that we can first begin observing the mind. And this is vigilance. But vigilance requires empowerment. Vigilance is not going to happen on its own. You have to want to be vigilant. That which sees must also be able to do. It's no point seeing the outer, seeing the inner, and doing what habit drives us to do. When we see the outer and feel the inner promptings of the inner, we must still be able to do what is best and ignore the promptings of the inner completely. And that is empowering vigilance. This initial empowering may not seem natural at first because we're so used to acting under the force of habit. And this is because of many factors. One, we're not clearly seeing the harm of conditioning's play. Two, lack of willpower. And three, just the force of habit trying to fight with aspiration. So we have to slow down a little bit, do one thing at a time, do it real well, and do it methodically, and bring the inner into the field of observation. This requires effort. And effort is nothing but sincerity. I didn't say struggle, it just requires effort. There is a difference between struggle and effort. In struggle, there is an opposing force. But in this inner field of view, we are the only entity, so we can be the only opposing force. And we need to make sure that we don't oppose ourselves. In other words, we need to be fully on board our own game or our own plan. The effort needed to correct this or free the mind from its habitual ways is directly proportional to the sincerity of the seeker's aspiration. And this is where that word sincerity comes in. So effort equals to sincerity. If we are sincere, the effort is still needed, but the effort I'm talking about is the effort without struggle. There's no problem with effort, but we all don't like struggle. Why should there be struggle in change? When we have seen the better, we should be fully on board. Where does struggle come in? Struggle points to something. It points to a lack of sincerity. And there are ways to correct that and fix that. So one has to stay continually awake so the mind sees that things go on much better without agitation and in peace by the inner intelligence. Then struggle ceases. For all of this, we have to be inwardly steady. Inwardly steady means we don't agitate ourselves. And that itself brings about a state of peace. When we remain inwardly steady and unagitated as a natural state for a long time, the inner intelligence is fully awakened and the habitual mind significantly weakened. This remaining steady, when it starts off, may be a little bumpy, but it gets to a point where it becomes steady. And this is what we are talking about. It is by our own non-agitation that peace of mind is intensified. Peace of mind does not come by agitation, it comes by non-agitation. The conquest of this and that and the attainment of everything else, whether it be in the corporate sector, the workplace, or in any field, is nothing compared to the conquest of the mind. Now, we move on to the second topic for today, which is purification. This purification that we are talking about is the series of adjustments, or the adjustments that are needed to steady one's sense of being in the self, as opposed to the personality, in the waking state. So all the steps that are taken to steady one's sense of being in one's true self, in oneself, instead of the ego personality, which is fickle, which changes from moment to moment, in the waking state, is called purification. This steadying may seem that it involves some doing at first, but doing is the doorway to being. By doing, if we don't change being or who we are, then the doing has not done much or done nothing at all. So this doing must strengthen the sense of being, and that is the only way that we can change or leave the shore of habit permanently. All that one does to bring about inner purification, there are a wide variety of practices for the different conditions and different temperaments. That, my friends, is too much to talk about in this little class. We know that from the techniques of yoga, but we will address a few of the key ones that Vasishtha talks about in his teaching. Among the many practices recommended by Vasishtha is the practice of fixing your attention within. This may seem very strange at first, because our entire attention is fixed on the outer. And nowadays, it's even more complex, because there doesn't need to be an outer per se. With all the gadgets and tablets and little screens that we have, the attention goes on a little glass screen, and we think it's on the outer, whereas it's actually really nowhere. So Vasishtha recommends fixing the attention in the space of the heart, and this weakens the habitual mind tremendously. The habitual mind must have a fixation on the attention outer. Even if it's in the thought realm, it must be out of consciousness or awareness in itself. So this fixing the attention within is a practice of staying vigilant till it becomes natural, steady, and ongoing. For this, Vasishtha recommends the use of the mantra. The mantra is repeated mentally and continually to the rhythm of one's natural breathing, and this is of tremendous help towards fixing the attention within. Just try it. Start repeating the mantra, which is a short aphorism, a short prayer, and repeat it mentally one time when you breathe in and one time when you breathe out. Stretch the mantra to the natural rhythm of the breathing, and I've covered this in earlier videos on meditation and japa. And this helps steadying the attention within. You're perfectly capable of observing the outer by keeping the attention turned on this. It will avoid its fixation with thought or conditioning, and it will break the grip of conditioning. This is the purification, one of the methods of purification that Vasishtha talks about. The inner intelligence thus gets empowered, and you will still be able to do what needs to be done, and be able to do it very well too, but without any personal motives, gains, assumptions, notions, and the whole bag. With this inner purification, you could break the grip of habit, as it's gradually weakened when you become aware of these promptings as habit. The problem is, when these arise, since these arise in consciousness, we mistake them for a true sense of being and not the force of habits. Gradually, these objects within our mind are divested of all the likes and dislikes, and things are seen just as they are. And by objects, my friends, We include people, conditions, and things. Anything considered external or objective to the sense of self. The mind is nothing other than concepts. I am this, this is mine. When these concepts do not arise in the mind, then the mind vanishes. The non-arising of these concepts purifies the mind. Then even the greatest of all calamities is not experienced as a loss. All ideas of loss and gain, which lead to sorrow and joy, arise from this faulty wiring of the mind. And when one becomes aware of it and is able to act in spite of it by doing what needs to be done, one weakens this entire mechanism and there is inner purification. We've just talked about purification. Purification is not a complex topic. It's a return to our own original nature or restoration. Even when you take an old car and you restore it, you're purifying it by getting rid of all the things that don't need to be there, like the dust on the paint and things of that kind. This inner purification is different because we are not dealing with substances as such. We are dealing with notions and thought. And thought and consciousness are very, very closely linked. They are the same thing with a slight transmutation in it. So this purification that we have discussed earlier requires us to stay vigilant continually. This vigilance includes the inner and the outer in the same field of view. Now, this may seem difficult at first because we are habituated or used to our attention being outward. But with sincerity and a little bit of diligence, it is possible to completely be free of all notions and distractions. See, my friends, there is no harm at all in the rising of these notions, and we are not talking about suppressing them any more than one can suppress waves in the ocean. Let them be there. But if the ocean were to get confused that it is being attacked by the waves, or it comes under the influence of the waves, then there's a problem. Similarly, let these notions be there in the mind. Let them rise and let them fall and splash back onto the mind. They will do so until they have exhausted all the energy that makes them do so, which is their residual momentum or energy. There's no problem with all these notions in the mind, whether they be promptings, urges, voice, whatever they may be. The problem occurs when these arising concepts start illuminating the objects, the diverse objects, which are also concepts. Let's break it down a little bit. When these concepts arise and illuminate what's out there and tell us that person is coming, this I don't like and that I don't like, and we start listening to this inner bullying, then there's a problem. The problem is not in these concepts. Let them be there. Let them exhaust themselves. Learn how to live and function in spite of them, weaken them, and empower wisdom. There's no problem at all with that. So the fall happens when these concepts arise and we give in to them and we handle or deal with what's out there in light of what's in here. This is the problem, and this is at the root of a lot of our tension, our sufferings, our problems, and difficulties. This fall can be prevented by leading an orderly and disciplined life, which includes four basic things, very simple rules. Doing what needs to be done because it needs to be done. Can we take the what's in it for me and all of that out of it? In every situation, do what needs to be done on its own merit. If it needs to be done, do it. If it doesn't need to be done, don't do it. Don't do it with an aftertaste, I don't like it. And don't not do it. Don't do it because I like it, and don't not do it because I don't like it. Can we take the I like and I don't like out of the equation? Because that's not wisdom, that's habit. Can we see instead, does it need to be done? And then do it well with all of our heart. So that's the first thing. Doing what needs to be done because it needs to be done. The second thing, one thing at one time. If we try to do more than one thing at one time, we are not going to see clearly, and wisdom is not going to be empowered. The third thing, to do everything wholeheartedly. Take this grudgingly or hesitatingly completely out of it. Do it. It needs to be done. Do it. And the fourth, be externally or eternally vigilant at the same time. Vigilant on the outer and inner. So these four simple rules, doing what needs to be done because it needs to be done. One thing at one time. Do everything wholeheartedly. Whether you may consider it trivial or very important. That trivial and very important are notions in our mind. They are not in the deed. And fourthly, be eternally or continually vigilant. With these, there is no suppression involved, but wholeheartedness and effort. Simply better choices that are going to be made at every step of the way. When we don't pay attention to these concepts that arise in the mind, they stop arising in the mind. The mind starts to become quiet. In the non-arising of concepts lies perfection, lies peace of mind, lies happiness, and real joy. See, my friends, you are conquered by the mind when a concept arises in it and it illuminates the diverse objects or things out there. There's no harm at all with the concepts arising, but we can prevent them illuminating or telling us what is what by actually engaging them directly as they happen. This will take some effort at first, but you can break the grip of habit and all of its problems if you are sincere. You will conquer the mind if you rest content in the self, empower the self, and stay undistracted by these concepts and notions. What we have just talked about is this inner restlessness. And now let's talk about some practical means for going beyond this restlessness. Vigilance is the key, my friends, and it may sound simple, but try it. Ongoing vigilance is what drains the mind of its notions and its grip on the objects outside. When we see an object outside, its corresponding notion arises within, and by being aware of it, you break the grip of that notion or all the ideas associated with the notion and deal with things as they are when they arise and let them fall just as they arose. The same energy which illuminates the objects has to now illuminate the self. So it has to be drained of its association with objects. But the key is that this cannot happen selectively. It's not difficult to remain vigilant at times when it doesn't seem to be so vitally important or so intrinsically connected to us. But there are moments in our life when we drop that vigilance, when we relax with what we call our people, our conditions, in our zones of familiarity. To stay vigilant means to stay vigilant all the time, including the zones of familiarity where we tend to drop our vigilance and so-called relax. But being vigilant is not a state of unrelaxation or a state of tension. Vigilance is not tension at all. Matter of fact, vigilance itself is relaxation because it allows you to always do the right thing all the time. The habitual mind is restless, and this restlessness is made calm by becoming steady. This requires one to lead a simple life, an orderly and disciplined life of inner purification. Restlessness, when it melts down, it itself becomes restful. Just as when the dashing waves of the ocean calm down and enter the ocean, they itself become the calm of the depths of the ocean. There is no difference between them. It's just how they function at that moment. So it's a struggle at best when you try to meditate without attaining some level of inner purification or calming the force of the waves of the mind. And this is attained by disciplined living. That's the first point. What is disciplined living? Avoiding distraction and distractedness or carelessness or careless living. That's the first thing. And at the same time, some practices like we have talked about, such as asanas, pranayama, japa, kirtan, and some daily study. These are five very simple practices. So disciplined living on one hand, which involves staying undistracted, doing everything wholeheartedly, one thing at a time. And at the same time, or along with it, some simple practices like asana, pranayama, japa, kirtan, and some daily study. In those simple practices, you will gain the sense of discipline, which is focusing on what needs to be done and doing it well, along with all of its side benefits. And it'll strengthen your sense of disciplined living, which is being able to deal with things as they are when they occur. The most important thing is you have to want to bring some order into the mind first. And for this, you have to stop stirring the mind as you function. Today, there's a lot of emphasis on being always connected, on all the time, and always on. And so this outer emphasis leads to an inner degradation. Let's look at these in a very simple way. I'm not going against technology or against the developments. It's in how we use them and our dependence on them rather than our dependence on the inner intelligence. The fragmentation that they bring about, which is the loss of inner peace. Today, people like to be always connected outwardly, but disconnected inwardly with their own sense of self. People like to access things all the time, but are never able to know timelessness. People prefer always on, but what about always on internally? So what we are talking about is not opposed to any of the growth or development, but nothing on the outer should lead to degradation of the inner. This inner cultivation is where you find your peace, your happiness, your joy, and your calm. So there is some order that needs to come about in our lives, and the mind's restlessness is curbed by bringing about some order into our life. We talk about quality of life, but there's no such thing as quality of life. There is quality of the person living life. What use is it to have all the shiny things in the world if we lose our own shine? So this order is tied to what is important, and discipline is the enforcing arm of order. This discipline we talk about, my friends, is not punitive as such. It is positive because it takes you to a better state of being and a better state of happiness that lasts and does not oscillate along with the rise and fall of notions. It is the power of restlessness itself with which the mind creates and sustains the illusions that we get bound by. The mind that is freed of restlessness is itself known as liberation. This, my friends, will involve a lot of falling down as we try to establish this balance. There is an inspiring saying, "Fall down 7 times, stand up 8. It doesn't matter if we slip in this process. What matters is that we move towards restoration of an inner balance that stays undisturbed amidst all the going-ons in life. Let things be as they are. Let the world be as it is. I'm not saying we don't care. But let us change the inner world first, and let us change it thoroughly. So no matter how things are or how things be, there is an inner steadiness that deals with them and does not oscillate or change with them." Today we talked about 4 things. Beyond conditioning was the first point. When inner vigilance is empowered, one can stay free of concepts or conceptualization, and therefore remain steady, unagitated, as the inner intelligence is fully awakened. This is the way to bring the habitual mind under control. The second point that we spoke about was purification. Purification is the fixing of the sense of the attention on the sense of self in the awakened state. The practice of fixing the attention within, in the space of the heart, helps weaken the habitual mind. When concepts do not arise in the mind vanishes. The non-arising of the concepts purifies the mind. The third point we spoke about was staying undistracted. In the non-arising of concepts alone lies perfection. This process takes time, but the longest journey begins with the 4 steps. You are conquered by the mind when concepts arise in it and be given to them. You conquer the mind if you rest content in the self and stay undistracted by these concepts and notions or conditioning. The last point we spoke about was beyond restlessness. Eternal vigilance is the key. It drains the mind of its objects or sense of objectivity, and in all of these notions, which are nothing but the self as such, start to melt down into subjectivity. It is the power of restlessness of the mind that creates and sustains the illusion that we seem to be bound by, and this has to be undone by the mind itself. The next time, we continue with the important teachings in the 3rd chapter. Friends, thank you for joining me today. To download this video, its audio, or PDF of the main points, kindly visit suryadevananda.org. Thank you.